I spent a lot of time just focusing on hiring, you know, and I really believe in, if you hire the right people, just get out of their way and let them do it. You know,
I'm figuring out. And when it comes down to it, because we went from a small mom and pop shop to now we have 17 people, and like, I want to keep growing. I want to keep getting bigger. I'm not saying you have to do it this way, but try it, see what the difference is, and then you can mold it into what you do, because every person installs differently. Me and him install, if you watch us tint two windows side by side, it looks like two different people. But we still go after the same goal, the same result.
So it doesn't matter if you have a car wash, doesn't matter if you're window tinting, doesn't matter if you're a dental office. You know, at the core of everything, it's people management. And that's the hardest thing.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Born to Tint podcast with the Miller Brothers. Excited to be here with my co-host and big brother, Josh.
How's it going, everybody? Today, we have an amazing guest for you, Ryan Heroy with Boston Dental Group. Enjoy.
Yeah, the first step that we do, we went to post-secondary too, because then you can get some funding for it, which is a lot less challenging, and then you jump right into that accreditation, which is like a year-long process to get through that. You know, so there's a lot.
Yeah, but that is like the whole us starting this was to eventually get to that end goal.
That's awesome.
We can only grow the business. I mean, we can grow the business so much in Vegas. We have so much opportunity here.
You have to look for other streams of income. Yeah. You know,
I want to go into other markets. I'm not trying to sell tint in another huge market.
Right.
I can only spread myself so thin before I want to tear my hair out. I think when it comes down to them.
That's awesome. That's you know, I think it's where you have to go, right?
No, it's been a process, and it's been an ever changing process, like with the program of what we're doing with now with Pineda at the moment, what we're entertaining or what he's kind of pitched to us, what he can, the next step for us is I love the idea of it. I'm pretty sure we're going to go through with the idea of it, but it's pretty much a mentorship to where we're learning directly from
them.
And then like already what they're doing is what we, the reason why we wanted to partner up with them to begin with is they had the knowledge of the whole podcast thing. It is create the long form content, cut it into the short form, and then build that trust. That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to build the trust with the consumer and then also educate at the same time.
Right.
And just grow what we can sell. You know?
That's awesome. You guys are doing a great job. Looks great.
Well, I feel ashamed.
Very professional.
I feel ashamed to kind of admit this, but when it came down to it, looking, technically Googling you because I had to, your position and where you're at and being COO and then I knew you did marketing, but I did not know that you were the COO.
Yeah. Yeah. It started, you know, I think are we doing this right now?
It's been going.
Oh, wow. Okay. I think from our standpoint, you know, never really wanted to be in operations, you know, went to school and learned communications, marketing, went through all that. And then, you know, I think the biggest thing is just what we learned from baseball and stuff over the years is, you know, as long as you work hard, there's opportunities going to open up for you. And I think that that's kind of what happened with me. I started with my current organization and the downturn of the economy back in 2010, right out of college. You know, I was happy to find a job for like $13 an hour, a marketing job. And that's with a Pepperdine degree and, you know, coming out of there. So, you know, just from what we've done over the years, you know, with baseball and stuff, it's really taught us great lessons, you know, and I know you can speak from that too, is, you know, how to outwork everybody else, you know, and as long as you can outwork everybody else, you know, those opportunities are going to open for you. And I think I kind of just fell into that role more so than, worked specifically for that role too. So coming out of
Pepperdine though, like what was the goal? Like, hey, obviously you said the goal is just that I want a job, but like marketing and the communications, was marketing kind of where you were first leading towards and then just...
I think so. You know, I think, I had to pick a major at the time. You know, communications was a pretty simple major, trying to work through.
Smart though.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes in anything, right? You can go into, you know, media, you can go into digital marketing, you can go into different areas too. So I chose marketing. I knew I was kind of a creative guy, so I, you know, made websites and did all that stuff on the side. Yeah. You know, and I wanted to go in that direction. So I think that's kind of the avenue I wanted to go into. So I just applied for jobs online and that's where I got to. And I'm in the same company I've been for the last 14 years.
Yeah. That's awesome, man. How is it being like running that many? Like, 'cause I mean, a pipe dream, or where we are as a company right now. We started off when I first started. I was an installer. My dad did sales. My mom ran the front. Very simple. And now we've grown to the point. Now we have 18 people. And now we've kind of split into actually like we've gotten to the point now where like I personally cannot manage 18 people. So we had to actually split into having divisions or having teams. We have our auto team, we have our flat glass team, and then we have the front office. That's where we've kind of grown to. And me trying to juggle around just three different divisions, and then with the very few people that we have in those divisions, in my eyes, like I said, when I came over, I read the bio, I was just like, holy shit, man. Like, eight teams, and then what, three sister companies?
Yeah, so we have, in total, the company that I work for is Boston Dental Group. We have 15 dental offices. So in those operations, in those dental offices, we have probably 150 operation team members. So that's dentists, hygienists, dental assistants, business assistants, all that. So, you know, on a global scale, that's the core of our business. But those other subsidiaries, kind of like what we were just talking about with different streams of income, Dr. Ting, who's the owner, he started these other streams of income. What we found with dental offices is that you're so relied on these dentists and the hygienists too. So what happens is if the dentist decides to leave, now you have 3 or 4 months that you have to wait to credential another dentist. And, you know, there's a lot of turnover in the dental field. So what he wants to do is kind of get that, and really focus on a different term of business. So he went with dental assisting schools. We have a back office billing school. We have a IT team. We have, an academy as well. So, and I think, to your question, the best way to do that is to hire good people. Our managers, and that's kind of where I come in, is that I spend a lot of time just focusing on hiring, and I really believe in, if you hire the right people, just get out of their way and let them do it. I think that's what it really comes down to is, you can, if you want to, be that micromanager, it's impossible to wear so many hats, and I think that's what I had to kind of overcome. I was so used to doing things myself and, because I started with the company when we had 8 locations and now we have 15 locations. So you were wearing a lot of hats. And then at one point you have to kind of step aside and say, hey, if we really want to scale this thing, we need to bring in good, like-minded people, and get out of their way. I think that's the big point.
Yeah. See, like, I didn't even see that. I didn't realize that those other three, the three subsidiary companies, the fact that like that feeds into that, like the cat, like that's,
we call it dentistry in a box, So what we try to do is, obviously we use our core business, kind of like what you're using for your core business. And then, that's how we leverage and we build that notoriety, around the, we can do it. We run our own dental practices, but we also have a dental lab that services 60 plus clients as well. So, the core business is great, but these other side businesses all support these dental offices as well.
Wow, that is like literally what we are going after. That is what we're trying to expand and do. And like that's the whole point of the Tin Academy, is that A, it's other set of income for us, and then let alone it provides us with installers. Our biggest problem we have in our industry is labor, and is the installers themselves. I mean, I can teach anyone how to tint, like when it comes down to it, but it's actually wanting to put the time in to train that person and understand what it's going to take to get that person to the point where they're an installer.
You're right on. I think you're on the perfect track. That's exactly what we did with the BDG Academy. The same thing. Our biggest turnover position is a dental assistant. So we said, what happens if we start our own BDG Academy where we can hire and train dental assistants, like-minded people that want to get into the industry, obviously charge them so we get revenue from it. And then we take the top, 5 out of 10 people and we hire them within our organization, and I think we're all on the same track, but it's worked out. I mean, without the academy, definitely through COVID and stuff, we would have seen, we would have been in a lot of trouble.
That is like literally exact, like that's, yeah, that's, I mean, that's a big reason for it is A, we get to see the people come in, see who the top performers are. Hey, you want to move to, looking to move to Vegas? Are we looking for a job?
Or even just somebody local that wants?
Well, that too. Yeah, no, it helps us locally tremendously, and then also opens up for me. It opens us up to the entire market of the whole country, because that's one thing our industry in whole for us is lacking, is installers. Every event we go to, either the tin offs or anything like that, if there's any of the big guys that like the guys that are at the top of the industry, they're usually there headhunting. They're looking for installers of the guy who's single, young, knows what he's doing. You can see that he has clean work. You have a conversation with him. He's got a great attitude. Hey, you looking for an opportunity? I can provide you with enough work to drown in. Just you got to move.
And that's exactly it. You know, I think being able to allow them, you know, to perform in front of you, see what type of work ethic they have, and then picking that cream of the crop. You know, another possible business for you guys would be to also be able to set up those academies within other tent groups. You know, we always look at competitors, right? So we're one of the largest privately owned dental company in Las Vegas. Most of these other groups are private equity backed, so they have a lot more funding and a lot more side of it too. We're owned by one single owner. But back to your point, you know, being able to set up these tin academies for other competitors, even out of state. You know, obviously you don't want to do anything locally because you don't want to compete with your own people. But out of state too, being able to set up that academy for them to be able to hire the cream of the crop on that side of it too. Like you said, online would be a great way to do that. I don't know how much you can do. I know hands on with tinting is a lot.
That's at least it sets the bar for entry. If you're interested enough to join the online tutorials, it's going to get you to where you get to see enough to where it's like, all right, is this something I'm actually interested in or not? To where if you make it past that bar and you go, all right, actually, I want to sign up for this class, and I'm gonna fly out, I'm gonna go do this class. Now we're getting someone who's already seen the content or the academy online itself, and like even structured where if you're already a paying member of the academy online, then have an incentive to have them come out to where, all right, now you've got to the point where you got to get hands-on with someone right next to you. Yeah, because you can only learn so much.
Yeah,
you can only do so much from a video.
And honestly, our initial like prime target audience for the academy is people that are already tinting cars.
Interesting. Okay.
You know, these manufacturers have dealers all over the country that don't do flat glass yet, which is a huge increase in revenue for them and for the manufacturer, because now they're selling more film. And they already partner up like with us, and we'll send our guys to training at the other auto academies, right? Now they'll be sending us people that are already dealers of theirs that they want to add to an architectural tint too.
Oh, that's awesome.
So clearly, like, someone like that that's being sent from an existing shop isn't someone we're going to poach, but like the independent guy that's coming
in. Yeah, coming in. Yeah, that isn't tied to
an organization that's being sent into us. That's the...
Yeah, no, to me, it's solely for people for us to look at. It's someone who has no tie to a company, who is literally sent with that. We've gotten our content out to where we've pointed the funnel in the correct direction to where, you're getting out of high school, you're looking for a trade, I can teach you a trade that can take you anywhere in the country and you'll be able to do that trade very easily, and then leave our academy with the accreditation of one of the manufacturers. I mean, I think that's one of the big reasons why the manufacturer stepping behind us is, thankfully, my dad's built a name within our company, and then we've won the competitions to show that, hey, we do know what we're talking about, to where the manufacturers feel comfortable, like, we want to send you here, because at least we know if you're leaving here, we want you to, like, you can install our films the proper way when it comes down to it.
That's awesome. So, you guys are building that brand, you know, and then, you know, you build that that brand that everybody wants to get behind too. And I think that's amazing what you guys are doing.
Yeah, no, it's I look forward to it. I hope it's right now we're in the phase of getting plans pushed back on what the shop's going to look like and slowly growing it from there. And we already have like the first class we're going to do. We already have about, I think, four or five guys picked out that we know within the industry that we just want them to come. Yeah, and we're just going to put it where you'll be the first class, and then I don't want to charge. I need the content. I need these are the guys I know that are top auto installers in our country that have already approached us and said, when you guys do this, let me know, I'm in. And it's like, I just want you to be there. I want to attach to the following that you have. People already know that how good of an auto tinner you are. Now I want you to leave our academy going like, I'm good to go.
Yeah, that was the huge like push for us to be like, okay, let's do this. Is before we even really mentioned we were doing it, just after winning the actually, I think after the year I won it, going to the SEMA show, like after parties, you had people coming up to you like, hey, I want to send my kid to come train with you guys for flat glass. Like, oh, okay. We're actually thinking about doing that. And now that I've got people just randomly, and then since we've been doing the podcast and talked about it a couple times, we have people DMing us, and it's like, okay. So the demand's already there. Now we just have to build the facility and start doing it. So
it's perfect timing too. I mean, nowadays these colleges and, you know, they're upwards of $100,000 a year. It's getting crazy. Yeah. You know, I mean, I'm even thinking for my own children, you know, like what kind of trade schools would be beneficial for them. Yeah. You know, you have all the baby boomers retiring right now, and You know, you could pick up a lot of these little companies, you know, plumbing, AC, HVAC, you know, and being able to learn a trade, I think, can take you anywhere, you know.
Yep.
So it's great what you guys are doing. That's awesome.
No, it's always something to fall back on when it comes down to it. As long as you, like, I don't need to, but if I had to pick up and move into a different city, I'd be able to find work. I'd be able to, I know there is a shortage in my industry for labor and for my skill to where I could be just fine. And let alone beyond just going to work with someone, I could sell and do it myself kind of anywhere I wanted to. Like, I know enough about the business now. And that's like, even like that's like the long term is beyond just the skill of installing. All right, this is how we run our CRM. This is how we book the job. These are our standard. These are our SOPs to have gotten us to where we're at, to where we're able to operate our company to where when after a proposal is approved, your job, that job is being cut and handed off to an install crew and go and do your thing.
That's, you know, awesome. Yeah. I mean, we do something very similar. We have a think tank as well, you know, kind of courses like that too. So not only do we have the academy, we also have the think tank where, you know, we bring dentists, we fly them all around from the country, all around the country, and bring them in, and then they teach on different courses. So not only are we talking about the clinical side of it, you know, with dentistry, but we're also talking about the business side of it too. So we bring in some of the top business speakers as well, you know, to come in and to teach our, not only our groups, but also external dentists and dental offices as well on how to manage their teams too. So don't look just into the clinical, I guess the technical side of Tint Team, but it's really the leadership and development that you guys are doing right now is, I think, bar none better than any other tinting group that's out there, you know, I mean, that I've seen, you know, and
it's been a hell. That's where, like, after I, like, again, like I said, I feel like a horrible friend and neighbor when it comes down to it. Like, I didn't even realize it's like I had a wealth of knowledge right across the street from me. That those are the things I wouldn't say I'm struggling with right now, but those are things that I'm figuring out. And when it comes down to it, because we went from a small mom and pop shop to now we have 17 people, and like, I want to keep growing. I want to keep getting bigger. I want to grow our footprint. And managing people was when it comes down to it. Like, I enjoy installing. There are days where I get to install, I'm just like, oh, this is the life. This is nice. I don't got to worry about nothing. And then, you know, I get back to doing what I have to do. But I also extremely enjoy the business side of it. Like, I've thankfully had multiple parts to my career now as just being a entry-level apprentice to being the main installer, because now running the company and realizing, like, all three of those things were completely different jobs.
Oh, yeah.
And thankfully, being an installer, it helps me understand, at least, and work with my installers and improve my communication. Like, this is one thing, like, you get in the degree in communication. Like, to me, if I was going to do anything, if I had to get a degree in communication, makes sense to me. Like, now at this part in my life, realizing that is literally the core of usually almost every problem or fire you're putting out, there was a miscommunication or something wasn't lining up. And just that small little thing being fixed would have solved the problem to begin with. But then by then you get to that point, you have egos getting in the way, people arguing with each other. And it's like having that many people, having that many teams, like how does your communication, I don't know, how do you do it? I don't know. It's so broad. I'm not trying to be as broad, but like to me, like I'm trying to manage four people. You're imagining, I know, I understand like the find great people. Definitely. That's one thing I got blessed with my dad having a stroke is thankfully we already had a team around, a whole team together to where it wasn't just me by any means necessary. If it wasn't for every key manager and also salesperson that was there when my dad went down, because that was like rug underneath, like the one person I always called for advice was my dad. Like any decision made in the company, I would talk to each person and then I'd call my dad, and it was always my dad's call. But he was always the person I called to. It was the first time in my life I wasn't able to actually call someone. It's like, all right, now I have to make these decisions. Like, how do you do that with that many teams when it comes down to how important communication is, but like, how do you communicate and how do you deal with the different personalities, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, you know, so I have my personally, and I think that's kind of how you have to structure it, right, is that you can't have too many direct reports. Even though we have a huge company and all that kind of stuff, I only have 6 direct reports myself personally. Even though we oversee operations for all these subsidiaries and all these team members, you have to, you know, focus on your team, right? So I think being able to, you know, manage 6 to 10 people at max, you know, anything more than that, you're popping in for quick meetings and, you know, you really don't know that person very well. You can't really grade their performance. You can't do that. So I think the structure has to, you have to really take a look at the structure first. And then from there, I think you even mentioned it too, you know, having redundancy. I think that that's also important as well. You know, if your business solely relies on one or two really key people, if those people walk out the door tomorrow, or something happens, you know, you have to have that redundancy. Everybody should be able to do everybody else's job. I think that that's also important too. You know, I know you have technical people that are, you know, and you have salespeople, right? So you generally, those people probably wouldn't be doing this each other's job, but where you can have that redundancy, I think is important too. You know, our dental assistants are cross-trained to be front office assistants, you know, and at least be able to answer the phone and be able to take messages and to be able to run the business in case, hey, the business assistant didn't show up that day too. So I think, you know, the big key is just focusing on your team, you know, and I think not micromanaging, because that's how you lose people quick, and then having that redundancy, you know, I think that that's very, very important.
You mentioned meetings. How important are meetings, and how do you structure yours to where they're actually engaging and they actually don't seem like they're just repetitive nonsense? Because that's a problem that technically I would say I'm having right now, is we've stepped up our meetings to where we're actually, we had probably way 10 times more meetings than we had last year, but then the previous year. But we stayed pretty consistent, but it's kind of fallen off with the expansion of the academy and all that stuff that we're doing and the transition through manufacturers. It's fallen off this last like 2 or 3 months. I've let the key people know, and I've talked to also the installers too, let them know like, hey guys, like these meetings are still important. I don't want you to feel like you guys are not being heard or not being, you know, paying attention to it. Everything's being noticed. But right now we have so much going on in the background. These are going to start up, and it's going to get back on track again. So how do you keep your, because I'm assuming meetings are extremely key to keeping everything going.
It is, you know, I think we live in a technical world too. So I think a lot of things, you know, that old adage, right? If it can be an email, let it be an email. You know, you don't have to have a meeting for everything either. I think COVID kind of changed our mentality on that a little bit. You know, obviously, you know, for the dental field, we had to work, you know, it was something that, and we were blessed to work, I should say, you know, we didn't get put out. We didn't have to go on, you know, on that side of it too, because there was a need, a business need to treat people. But during that time frame, you know, we all went remotely. So we had to have virtual meetings. We used a lot more emails. We used a lot more IMs and stuff. So I think from that standpoint, I would say, you know, have your crucial meetings, but, you know, don't overmeet either. You know, yeah. I think for our dental offices, what's important for us on a day-to-day business side of it is that we have a morning huddle. So we spend, you know, 10 minutes setting up the day. This is the customers that were coming in today. This is the patients that we have. These are our key patients. These are the patients that need a little bit more assistance on that side of it, and then break. And then we all know what's laid out for that day. And then from there, we usually have like a monthly meeting, you know, and in that monthly meeting, it might be a half hour long. We're going over big announcements, policy changes, you know, that types of stuff. But besides that, there's not a lot of meetings. You know, I think we focus more on, you know, the technical side of the job and the training side of it, because I think that that's important too. You know, we do a lot of our training, not necessarily by SOPs. We do a lot of our training by a learning management software program. It's called an LMS, where we put a lot of our videos on how to do things on there, so they can always refer back to those videos. We just find that like a written SOP, some people learn differently. Most people are visual learners. So then they're able to, you know, watch the video, learn how to do it, and then go ahead and do it too. So, you know, I think that those, you know, I kind of went in a tangent there, but hopefully it answered some of your question.
Oh no, it absolutely did. Unfortunately.
Yeah. I loved it. we've done a really good job creating a written down. We're still working on it, but we at least have one now, written SOP. And I've been saying from the jump, we need to have every single one of these lines of this as a video explaining exactly how to physically execute what this is saying.
Especially your demographic, you know, it just depends on who you're hiring, right? Yeah. You know, if you're hiring a lot of baby boomers, for instance, you know, I'm not trying to age anybody, but, you know, a lot of baby boomers are used to reading SOPs their entire life. They've sat down and read an SOP. But when we're hiring these new, you know, Gen Z, I don't even know what the new generation is right now, but, you know, the big thing is to make sure that it's visual. You know, that's why we do everything via video, because, you know, they're visual learners, they're quick impact learners. You know, I think sometimes our videos are too long. You know, if it's a 15-minute video, they're disengaged. You know, yeah. I think the biggest thing is keeping them short and sweet, you know, anywhere from 3 to 5 minute videos. And it could just be as easy as, you know, with your stuff, you don't have to worry too much about HIPAA and, you know, PHI, patient health information. So, you know, we have to be very, very consistent of how we keep all of our data. But for you guys, it could be easy as just, you know, sending them a handful of videos on YouTube and just having the YouTube videos on there too, you know, where they're just learning the technical side of it too. Yeah. So it doesn't have to be so fancy. It could just be something very basic.
Yeah, well, it's really cool with the CRM that we use is you can upload media into it and tag it. So we could literally just have the library right in there in the software everybody has to use every day.
Perfect.
And they've even got they've got really good stuff as far as technically how to use it. Like if you've got any the help center in there, if there's something on how to use it, there's already stuff built in. But putting our own personalized videos of this is how we schedule a consultation. This is, you know, the short little 3-minute videos on this is how you do it. So if you've got a question on how you need to do that, it's right there.
That's perfect. Watch and I think that it also shows your culture, right? I think that that's a big part of the training part of it. It's one thing to learn something technically. You sit down and, you know, you have the video and somebody's talking, but you can implement your culture with video. With an SOP, you know, they're only reading line by line items too. There's no culture or there's no personality.
It's like lower resolution. One of the benefits I say to that we have right now today using video, right? Like how much more information and understanding way somebody's thinking do you get from a, let's say, a 3-hour Joe Rogan podcast where they're talking about maybe some tough topics and you can talk about those tough topics in that scenario and you can sit there and listen to it and not get all emotional. But you take that same subject they were just talking about, make it a 128-character tweet, and watch the firestorm of comments that come afterwards because you lose tone, you lose all
context,
that.
Context, you lose everything,
So by going to video, you're going to have the tone of my voice saying what we're doing, visually seeing it. There's just so much more information there than reading a line in an SOP.
Yeah. Yeah, you should have explained like that to begin with.
So I need
And I recommend even at the beginning having you know your culture, your history about where you guys came from. I think that that's equally as important, right? Because people want to be a part of something not because of the business line you're in. They can go to any tint shop down the road, right? And they can join, but they are a part of you because of your culture, your legacy, kind of what your dad built and started with you guys. And then, you know, that history that comes with it and how many hurdles you guys jumped over, all the accolades you guys have won. I would put all that stuff in there so people know that they're joining, you know, not only a company, they're joining a family, really. I mean, that's really what you look at, you know.
Oh, no, that's definitely, I would say, something that we tried to do. And at the same time, I think it's kind of naturally happened because, thankfully, of being the family, family-operated company and it being so small to begin with. And everyone, we first had like an installer here or there. Every installer, for the most part, that's been around us for a decent amount of time, I consider them, even the ones that we've parted ways with, I'm not going to say walk away, parted ways with, because there's fault on, if anything, more on our side than anything else, just not knowing how to, I don't know, I guess it sounds stupid, but operate a small business. Like there's so many, the people that we technically have lost in the past, in my eyes, is just not knowing. I don't know.
Not being good enough leaders.
You
could definitely take ownership on.
But that all comes with time, you know.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I think you kind of have to make those mistakes to learn from them to get better at it, right?
Like, that's the only way you learn, you know. And I think with hiring good managers, it's the same thing. You have to let them fail. You know, we can sit here and micromanage. You can tell them what to do, but what is that getting out of that person? You know, they're not going to be resilient. They're not going to be redundant. They're not going to be able to help take your team to the next level if you're just sitting over top of them and telling them what to do all the time like a puppet. You know, I think that's what we really focus on, again, is hiring good people and then just letting them make the mistakes, letting them lead and supporting them with those mistakes too. You know, it's not calling them out in front of their team. It's, hey, you know, we made a mistake. I understand. Move on, you know, and go from there.
Yeah, no, that's definitely something I suck to begin with. I think I've gotten better with, but that's definitely something that any person that we bring on, like any of the new hirees, which we used to try, you know, we still try to find someone who says, you know, hey, I've been doing it for 5, 7 years, whatever, bring them in and see what they got and kind of go from there. Unfortunately, a lot of times that comes with a lot of baggage and either being just, unfortunately, our industry is extremely ego-driven. Everyone thinks they're the best after they've learned for like, you know, a couple of years. I was the same way. You know, when it came down to the beginning part of my career, I thought I was the best. Looking back at it now, I knew nothing. It just took me time to kind of grow into realizing that when it came down to it.
You guys know exactly what you're doing. You guys are doing a great job. I mean, I've seen you guys take the, you know, the leadership courses as well. You know, you guys are, now that you guys are part of social media, and I think that that's something that we need to be better at in my company too. Yeah, we might have all the technical skill set, but we're not putting ourselves on that platform to show other people that we are capable. We know what we're doing too, where I think you guys are taking that big leap. Being vulnerable. I think that that's part of the process, right? Is to be vulnerable and then, you know, just learning as you go. I mean, I think that that's really important. And I've seen a huge improvement just based off of what I've been watching, even on the podcast. You know, I think you guys have done a great job. So
I appreciate that, but it still feels like I'm an idiot and don't know what I'm talking about when it comes down to it, you know, but. You know,
well, I think that that's where I think you can get mentors and we can, you know, and that's what I'm lucky about is that my owner, he has been my mentor through all this whole process too. And he's let me fail and I've made terrible, terrible mistakes and just finding that one right person to be your mentor.
Remember where I was at was letting them fail. I don't know. So with letting them fail, like the one thing when we bring in the young guys, we have the older guys that try to come in. Usually we've gotten to a point now, bringing anyone who says they have experience usually doesn't work out. Still always open to it because I'm always looking for that diamond in the rough where I can bring them in. It's like, oh, they do know what they're doing. And also they want to learn. They're past that point of thinking I know everything. Very rare, but still always welcome.
But I think it's more likely now even because of this, because we're putting that out there. Like, hey, if you know how to tent and you're going to come to us and try to get a job, like, we'll take you, but know that, like, you need to be humble and realize you don't know everything and want to grow. Because we're going to invest in helping you learn and get better.
Yeah, well,
but you need to want to. If you just already think you're the best, like, just don't even.
Well, it's not even that. I want you to be that confident. I want you to be that cocky when it comes down to it, because that means that you want to be the best. That's awesome. But at the same time, if you're failing at something, and then I let you fail at it a couple of times, I'm gonna let you fail, and then I'm gonna step in. Okay, why don't you try this? And then if your rebuttal is, "Well, it's not how I was taught," I know. You keep having the same problem. Why don't you try this to see if it solves the problem? I'm not saying you have to do it this way, but try it, see what the difference is, and then you can mold it into what you do. Because every person installs differently. Me and him install, if you watch us tint two windows side by side, it looks like two different people. But we still go after the same goal, the same result. And he's won, I've won. We both get to the same point, but we do it completely different. Bringing in someone new, I tell them the same thing, like, you're going to learn, we're going to teach you how to first prep, clean, do all the basic stuff, you know, but when you start installing, like, this is how our pay structure works, and it works this way for the sole fact, for the first year, you're going to waste film. You're going to waste film. You're possibly going to cost me money on a car. You're possibly going to cost me money on a house. It's something that might accidentally happen because you've never done it before, and I'm fine with that. I want to accelerate that. To where, don't worry about that piece of film that you have to rip off and put a new piece on. I want you to do that because quality is what matters. I don't care that it had to come down. Now, if you keep making the same mistake over and over again, and I'm telling you, hey, you need to stop doing that. You need to do it like this. And then you're just completely blocking me out. I have a problem with that. Or if, like, we have with some of the younger guys in our shop, if they made a mistake of, like, unfortunately, we had Nissan GTR. They were trying to get something out of a window. They forgot to recover the dash and put a soak rope, which is just like a beaded microfiber rope, at the bottom of the dash to catch the water because there's a lot of electronics in vehicles. They went to fish something out of the window. They didn't do that step again. They took everything off, and what ended up happening? We fried a sensor.
Oh no.
Yeah, $2,600 mistake. I pulled that installer aside, and like I can already tell he's beating himself up. I don't need to get on him anymore. He already feels like a piece of shit. Like it's because I've been there.
Right.
I've broken the same things. I had a lot more leeway. It was my parents' company.
Right.
Like they, I mean, my dad came down on me, but at the same time, technically, it's job security. I'm not going to argue around it. Like it would take a lot for my dad to say like, "Hey, you're out of here." Like he's gonna ream me. I know the reaming's coming, but at the same time, I still have that little bit of blanket. And all I had to do is pull that guy aside and like, "Dude, you're good. Learn from it. It's shit's gonna happen. Do I wish it didn't? Of course. But at the same time, like now we know. Don't skip that step. And that to me is that's where I was driven with the written SOPs, stuff like that. Like as we encounter these things and they happen, it's gonna go in there. And now next time something like this happens, if you blatantly skip that step and we all have it written, like this is a step. You gotta do it no matter what. I don't care how much extra time it takes you. I'll deal with a customer who's pissed off about why is it taking so long. Sir, we saw something in your window and we care more about our quality that we aren't going to send you out with having you come back to us. Like I can deal with that customer. I don't want to go out to the customer. Hey, we dumped so much water into your dash because we didn't cover it appropriately. Now we got to, you know, repair your vehicle. Like I don't want to deal with that. I'd rather deal with the customer on the other side.
I think that, you know, you make a really good point too. I think it's in collaboration too, because don't get me wrong. We have lots of, you know, checklists, and we have lots of different written materials as well. So I think it goes hand in hand, because you have to be able to hold them accountable for it too. We have a whole performance management system, very similar to our LMS, but for the performance side of it too, where we're able to document that, and we give 6 month performance reviews, and we have all that stuff on there. So that's kind of where our written part of it comes in. But I think it has to be in collaboration, right? Because if you just hand a team member an SOP, you know, a 40 page SOP, first of all, they're probably not going to read it. Second of all, they're going to read through it very sparingly and hit the key points. And then third of all, when it comes down to it, they're going to ask you, you know, when you yell at them, they're going to say, "Did you read the SOP?" And they're going to say, I thought I did, you know. So I think it really comes down to, you know, kind of that show, tell, do. I mean, that's kind of our philosophy too, where we show them how to do it initially. You know, we're demonstrating it. You know, tell them we you know, we tell them exactly step by step on how to do it, and then we actually have them do it, and then we give them feedback on it. And it's kind of that reciprocal process too. So I think, you know, from that standpoint, I think, you know, you need a culmination of those materials for sure.
I've got a question. So is some of that you guys are doing, is it kind of like train the trainer type of stuff,
where
you can train your training in a style that this person can then take it back to their office and train their people? Because that's basically, like, I just heard you say show, tell, do, and that was, like, totally how we taught stuff in the military. And it was always geared at train the trainer. So if you're always doing that, you're just maximizing the ability for that information to get out.
100%. I think that's that's the most important part too. You have to be able to know how to do something enough to be able to teach it.
Yep.
That's how you know that person strongly knows their job and their job functions, is if they can go teach it to somebody else. Yeah. They might not be the best teacher, but they can teach step by step on how to do that function. So I think that's really important too. How we have it set up too is that we have a 30, a 60, a 90-day process. It's an onboarding process, so they learn just bits and pieces in the 30-day. They're only responsible for 10 tasks in their 30-day. They're only responsible for 10 tasks in their 60-day, and they're only responsible for 10 tasks in their 90-day. And through that time, now they have 30 tasks that they can do. You can't expect so much out of them in that first 30 days. A lot of times we want to hire somebody, you know, right off the street, or somebody at a different, you know, company, and have them come in and do the job right away, you know, the next week. How are you not getting this, you know?
Yeah.
But people only retain at such you know, small level. You know, they have to be doing it every single day to finally get it, you know. And then after that, we send them with a hands-on trainer. So in between, we send them with a hands-on trainer. So a hands-on trainer goes in, does the hands-on training, you know. So not only are they learning the online training, they're getting the hands-on training, and then they're doing it themselves, you know. So that, you know, show, tell, do that we talked about too. And I think, you know, from there, most of our staff, any of our office administrators and lead dental assistants, they're also training. So we send them, they're the hands-on trainers for new hires. So it's kind of that reciprocal process, you know, and it comes full circle.
Yeah, for sure. That's totally the vision and idea I've got for the school we're doing, is like have somebody come from a shop owner, whatever. We should be teaching them in a way that they're going to be able to take this back and the digital content we record of it, that they can take that same way that you would create video SOPs inside of your business. Now they're going to have this library of videos of what they learned. They can bring back and teach their guys.
It's perfect.
Yeah. And show the videos of, this is exactly how they taught me. And even for themselves, like learning something hands-on for 3 days, you can only retain so much.
Yep.
But if you got that hands-on training and you've got a digital something to go back on and watch the videos of, what was that first step? Okay, cool. Awesome.
Got it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it's also building your brand. So you're branded all the way through that. So everywhere that that video goes, you might think it might be a loss leader because they're sharing it here and there, but it's building the brand of, you know, Green Valley 10. I think that that's just as important. Yeah. So.
Oh, no, that's definitely something I'm starting to realize kind of where, I'll not say how big our name is, because I still... But it's surprising when we go to certain events and all of a sudden some random person, not like it's just random too, like, follow you guys on Instagram. And like all of a sudden stuff, they start rattling off. I'm like, okay, you know, actually a good amount.
Yeah.
Wow. This is kind of, it's kind of crazy.
It's the power of social media. I mean, it's wild nowadays.
And what's weird is I still feel like we suck at it. I still feel like we've gotten so much better, but it's like, I still feel like I know how much better we'll be at it and how much more followers and engagement we'll have 5 years from now.
Oh, definitely. Like, I mean, do you know of any other tinting companies that are doing scale? Oh, I mean,
there are certain there's a couple of podcasts out there. One, the guy who sponsors TintWiz, he has what's his podcast called?
Tint Wisdom.
Is Tint Wisdom. He's got one. We've been on it, I think, 3 times.
Oh, cool.
He he'll go through spans. Well, he'll do a couple episodes, but it's all live. It's live.
Yeah, I think like Facebook live.
And then he posts it all on all different podcast platforms. And then there's another one, Dark Truth, which is really geared towards industry installers and stuff like that. But same thing, it's Facebook Live. A lot of live, like one guy, Tinter Tuesday, he does the same thing. He does a live every Tuesday. Yeah. I'd say this is the
Tinter battles that we're going through right now. That whole thing is set up by Carlos, the Texas Squeegee out of Texas. His content's awesome. Actually, follow him on TikTok or Instagram. But he's got this whole Tintertainment group. The Tinter Battles thing we're going to, he's going to be live streaming it.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, there's people that are doing way more than us, but it's like in town here, I don't think so.
Yeah,
but
no.
Nationwide, for sure.
Even let alone kind of at the fact of, like, even with Eric, this was the first podcast day. It was like, kind of wasn't just like a live, which I do enjoy the live, but at the same time, like, I'm going to try to avoid do anything over a computer with this as long as I possibly can. Like, I've already started reaching out to other installers within the industry that I do want to sit down and talk with, and like, hey, you cool with flying out on a red eye Sunday night, and then you'll get in Monday, we'll do the podcast, I'll send you home Monday. Like, you cool with that? And the majority of them are like, yeah, absolutely. I want to sit down face-to-face. Like, it's the conversations we've had over the computer are good. I've enjoyed every single one of them, but it's so much different actually being in person. Like, I'm looking forward to next week when we go to this event, is that when they released, because we're going to be trainers, we got invited to be trainers at it, that I noticed when they released the floor plan, I saw in the corner, it said podcast, I forget what they call it, something podcast. I hit Carlos up, and I was like, so what's that about? And he's like, well, it's going to be set up kind of like how you guys had out in Vegas, and whoever wants to reserve it, you're the first one to ask about it. I'm like, yes, I want to try to knock out as many as I possibly can, because I now have all the top industry guys in one spot.
Right. Yeah.
I don't have to coordinate anything.
That's awesome.
Makes life so much easier.
That was the beauty of actually when we started this. We started recording right before SEMA came to town. So we scheduled all the people that came to town. So we got a bunch of industry people that came in town for SEMA and knocked out like 6 that week. So
that's awesome.
That was cool.
Yeah.
That was a gauntlet.
Yeah, you guys are doing big things. I'm telling you, I enjoy watching each of the podcasts, you know, the long form, and then also, you know, I really like the reels too. I mean, there's little bits and pieces that you can learn from it, even if you're not intenting. You know, I think that that's important too. And when you're bringing on other people that are not necessarily in the industry, but business people, then you're expanding even further. I think that that's important too. And I try to tell my wife that as well, is that it doesn't have to be so focused on your industry. You know, if you bring on people that have other knowledge, then, you know, it expands that drastically too.
Again, like I said, I didn't realize I had so much knowledge across the street from me that I would have been bugging you with other conversations a lot earlier.
I don't have all the knowledge. I just willing to help. I think from that standpoint too. I think we need to get together more often and, you know, talk business and, you know, and learn from each other's mistakes. I think, you know, there's a lot of stuff that I can learn, you know, from the social side of it, from you guys as well, and you know, really, you know, take our dental offices to the next level.
That's my biggest thing is the knowledge that where you're at as a company right now, do I think I want to get to a size, have that many locations, 10 shop? No, not necessarily. But growing my company and managing more people, you're light years ahead of me because you've already been in the trenches you got 2014, but that's when you took over as COO. Like, that's 10 years of managing that big of an operation. I hope to get to a point where I'm managing something of that size.
But
the scale of it. I mean, one of the reasons we teamed up with Pineda, like his thing came across and how he pitched it too was exactly how kind of we're putting our stuff out. Have the short form out there. You're just kind of letting people know who you are. You know, hey, you know, this is who I am. And then you can get to our long format. Then you get to know us. Then you can kind of trust us. And that was how he landed us. Like, I already kind of was already following his content to begin with. And all of a sudden across my feed comes a, are you looking to start a podcast? Do you want to grow your brand? Like, and I'm like, yep, click here. I clicked it. I put all my sister's information in. I text my sister, hey, I just sent you in for a thing with a podcast. Had a conversation with, because he was already talking about it. And I was like, yeah, I want to do it. But I don't know how to operationally pull it off. Like, I know it can be done, but how much extra work is going to have to go into editors, finding the right camera equipment, or finding a studio? Like, I don't have the capacity to pull this off at the moment. But all of a sudden, the opportunity came to, like, hey, we can do it. We can use our team type thing. And it was a program at the time we were able to take advantage of. And it was like, we can do it now. But if we're going to do this, we're going to do it. We're going to go all in and do it. And doing that now, it's like I'm starting to realize that I want to get myself to get us to the next level is I need to start talking with people that have already had the experience, have gone through the grind of either doing it or have the knowledge of just doing it year after year, because that's the only way you're going to get better. Like from the start of the podcast to where we're at now, how much is like, I go back and listen to the first couple of episodes and I'm just like, I can't stop saying the same words over and over again, which I've listened to the last couple ones I've gotten much better with, but it's like listening to the first one. And like I'm listening, I said it again. I said, in the first couple of episodes, and I was just like, I really need to work on how I talk. And it's helped me grow on just communication in general. That aspect, it's helped me grow tremendously with that. Just how I'm actually holding a conversation with somebody and continuing with not just sounding engaged, being completely engaged in a conversation. It's helped me grow tremendously with that.
Yeah. I mean, that's awesome. I mean, at the heart of all business, right, it's the same fundamentals, right? So it doesn't matter if you have a car wash, doesn't matter if you're window tinting, doesn't matter if you're a dental office, you know, at the core of everything, it's people management. And that's the hardest thing. You know, once you can, and I'm not saying that anybody masters people management, once you can get the fundamentals down to, and to be honest with you, once it gets, you know, past 100, that's when you're really held to the policies and the laws, you know. And I think that from our standpoint, we're seeing the pains now because we're past 100. So, you know, offering medical insurance, offering, I think it's over 50 for medical insurance, but, you know, held to these higher policies and laws that we were not held to before, ACA, EEOC, you know, just so many different things. So it causes even more trouble. One thing I always say with our handbook too, because I mean, I'm sure you guys have, you know, a basic fundamental handbook, but you know, from our standpoint, we've had to make it so rigid that it kind of takes the soul out of the company sometimes, because, you know, we've dealt with all these issues over the years that we have to keep on adding to it. So at one point now it's like, you know, dress code and, you know, you name it, it's on there now. You know, and I think it makes companies more rigid. So I think, you know, that fine line, that golden company is anywhere from, you know, 25 to 50 people, because you're not held to those standards. So that way you don't have to be as rigid anymore. You know, we had a lot more flexibility when we had 5 offices, 8 offices, you know, and 50 team members, because you were able to do a lot more, you know, and figure out the expenses there. But once you get to, you know, bigger, you know, 100+, you know, you have to be a lot more rigid. And I think that's the part that I struggle with the most, is because, you know, I like the flexibility. I like to be that family company, but at the same time, you know, you can't be, because you have to be policy driven, because you have to you know, you can't have favoritism. You have to keep the same policies for everybody across the board. And one of the departments I head up is HR. So, you know, from an HR standpoint, you know, we have to be fair across the board. That's the number one thing. So when it comes to leave of absences, when it comes to, you know, any type of policy that we're writing, we have to be fair across the board. I mean, it doesn't matter if it's your best employee. It doesn't matter if it's your worst employee. You have to treat them equally based off of that policy and that infraction. So I think that that's the trouble that I deal with right now.
Yes. Yeah. That's where I'm. Yeah. 25 to 50 sounds
perfect.
Perfect. I don't know. Yeah.
I think that being more scalable, like you guys are already doing, right. And starting the academy where you don't need so many trainers, but you could then have the influence, nationally, you know, or at least very high locally. And then eventually nationally or online, you know, looking at those streams of income where you don't have to have, you know, 50 tinters that are there, but figuring out ways that you can be more profitable without having the overhead too. Yeah. So.
Oh, no, absolutely. Yeah. It's like you said with like bringing like with your guys' academy, you guys bring people outside into training and stuff. That is something even with the 10 Academy that we're looking to do that we already know going to the 10 offs and stuff. And now they're ramping up, like there's even more of them popping up all over the place. But the network of installers that we already do know from across the country, from the East Coast, West Coast, all over the place, we plan on asking those guys at the top in the industry that we're friends with now, that we've been friends with now and been able to network and partner with over the past, you know, decade. Like, we want you to come in because the biggest thing that we've always preached when it comes to what we do is there's, you know, the old saying, there's a million ways to skin a cat, correct? Yeah, I didn't screw that up. Like I said, between me and my brother, installation wise, we're two completely different. If you go to the competitions of the top guys, you can watch 10 guys that are technically the top in the industry and we all look completely different. Like I'm watching one guy like do something, I'm like, why are you doing that? But at the same time, that same guy has won before. So it's like, I'm not really questioning it. I just really want to know why you're doing it. It seems like you're making your job so much harder, but you know what you're doing. You're producing top quality. So I'm just going to go ahead and shut up and let you do your thing. So, going to those competitions has furthered me in just as an installer at just seeing that stuff and surrounding myself around those people and seeing like the two different groups. Like you see a very big split when you go to those competitions. You have the guys that are there that should be there, but also like are the cockiest people in the goddamn world. And it's like,
it's like baseball.
What's funny is I think we always talk about going to those and how much we learn for installing, but equally we've learned just as much about running a business by just like our thirst for doing this. We know who's bigger than us in the industry. And
that's
who
you learn from. Yeah.
Let's talk to this person. Or I like talking to people that are coming up and it's like a younger guy. Well, maybe like my age, but with a kid, and he's like in the scenario our dad was in, and like they come up and like, oh, I hope my son follows me into it, and like having those kinds of conversations.
Oh, that's cool.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, like that knowledge is invaluable. Like, and that's what we're trying to cultivate with this, and having that school and have people come in from all over the country is like, all right, not only is this person going to be able to come in and teach their different installation techniques, but maybe they have a sales technique that we haven't thought of or a way of selling a certain product that they're going to have knowledge on that. Okay, cool. Awesome. What's wrong with that?
Oh, that's definitely the biggest thing. That I would say is something that does go over the top of my head when it comes to those industry events is, I'm talking, even within our manufacturer, we have a conference within one of our manufacturers, Panorama, that every time we go to those, try to gravitate towards, I know who the top guys are. I know who's technically winning the awards most of the time because of what volume they're doing. That's why they're winning that award, is the volume they're putting out. And I can put two and two together with, all right, you're purchasing this much.
Right.
Yeah. I know what, I know what your business is doing. Like, what are you doing?
Right.
Like,
yeah. What are you doing differently? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, how are you operating? How's your sales? How are you marketing? How are you how are you creating your leads? Like, I want to know all that. How are you landing these huge projects that are, you know, a 100,000 square foot building? Like, that's the project I want to go after. Yeah. Like, that's what I want to do. Like, at least that's what I want to grow to, but still keep, I guess, everything else at the same time. But it's figuring all that out is put myself around those people as much as possible. And thankfully we're in networks to where I know that at a drop of a dime, I can technically try to reach out and I can call and eventually connect and like run a question by him. Like I did that when my dad had his stroke, like when all of a sudden we had a sales position. we never had a sales position for Flat Glass. Like, that was always my dad's. Now, all of a sudden, my cousin stepped in, which, like, I have regret with how we kind of left her in the wind, because she actually stepped in and took care of a position where she was trained-ish. She was an assistant to my dad for so long. She watched my dad sell, and then she kind of was just kind of hit the ground running, like, here, figure this out. Good luck.
Jumping and swim, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
She killed it.
No, she did.
That's awesome.
Oh, she did amazing. I feel bad in the fact that how much we could have done for her, and she would have done even better than she already did, and what she already, like I said, she was one of my saving graces when it came down to my, that happening with my dad, was her stepping into that role. And if I would have, like, A, done a little bit more training with her, but with all of a sudden that position opening up, like, I had to, like, I started reaching out to my reps, and I was like, I need to talk to Steve. Can you get me his number? Like, cause I knew how he run his operation. I know he had sales, he had a sales team. And then I was like, how are you paying your sales team? Like, what's the pay scale? Like, I don't know this territory at all. I don't know, like, with base, with commission, like, we ran through a bunch of different scenarios, and he told me, he's like, I've tried every which way to Sunday to do either commission this way to make it simpler or a higher base, but then you keep in track of all these extra things. And then, but like, his knowledge was like
instrumental. Yeah. I mean, that's key. I mean, if you look at, you know, everybody always looks at their competitors, like, you know, they're the worst thing that ever lived, you know, and it really is not the case too. Yeah. We sit down with some of the biggest DSOs in Las Vegas and their managers, and, you know, we snowball, we pick each other's brain to figure out, you know, okay, their practice management system, you know, does it have any bugs? Does it have any, you know, we might want to go to that practice management system. So the more you can build those relationships, I think the better off you're going to be, for sure, because then you can just bounce things off them, you know. And I think there's so much business out there that no one's competing on any level. There's so many fish in the sea. There's so many patients for us that, you know, you can bring in another 1,000 dentists and we're still going to be fine because, you know, people are coming to Vegas, and it's the same thing for you guys too. So I think it's just the fact that you have those relationships in the industry is instrumental. And I think that, you know, the more you can make and the more you can even, you know, start focusing on even other businesses, so even commercial real estate, and, you know, getting to know people that are building the buildings and getting to know that, you know, I think that that's where that next step is too. That's how they're getting these contracts most likely, is because they're in at the ground floor. Yep. You know, they know the builders, they know the apartment complex builder, you know, they know everything, you know, so.
Yeah, it's crazy. As much as there's variability in the installation technique, the style of tint businesses that's out there is infinitely crazy, different. Yeah. Like, you got the solo guy in a tire shop for $99 to, like, the company he was talking about, they don't do any marketing. They've got sales reps that are making those relationships to get those big projects, and that's all they do.
Yeah.
They don't deal with residential, you know, like, there's so many ways to skin that. I guess I'm repeating what you just said.
Yeah. Sure.
I think I might have just heard that. But yeah, it's like kind of crazy. Actually, I was just in Phoenix this week and my daughter had a softball tournament out there, and I stopped at this gas station. I only stopped at it because they have a giant detail bay that they had like 10 bays of install bays for tint and paint protection, and then like four more off to the side. And I walked in and kind of got the, like, all right, for that Santa Fe over there, how much for ceramic tint and paint protection and ceramic coating? And the guy went through his spiel, and I was like, okay. He's like, trying to get me scheduled, and I can give you another discount. And I'm like, no. I own a tint shop in Vegas. I was just trying to see where you guys were at. And he's like, yeah, no. And we got 6 locations around Phoenix right now. Dude, this operation was giant. I didn't even know they existed. And they make us look like a speck on the wall.
6 locations.
Yeah, and this was on a Sunday, and all the bays were full. So they're running like 7 days a week with a full car wash. It was pretty wild. I didn't even know they existed. A SunTech dealer. But yeah, there's so many different ways you could do it out there.
Yeah.
I love the idea of if you're focusing on automotive, have the car wash. Like, that's smart. At a gas station.
I think it's great, yeah. A little gas station, yeah.
Yeah, that's
car wash, or you got the detailer attached to it. Your car detailed. And
all the above. It's kind of how we do with braces, right? So at the end of braces, we get whitening done, you get, you know, everything. So it's like, you know, no one wants to have straight teeth but not white teeth, you know. So it's kind of the same thing. It's like, you want to have a nice car wash at the end of your window tint, right?
That's actually a good way to look at it.
With the ceramic coating with them, they threw in a year of free car washes. You can come back and get your car wash whenever you want. That makes sense with
because they've got the, they're just like, okay, cool.
It's all marketing. Yeah. I mean, it's just that one thing that differentiates you from the window tinter down the street. It could be the difference between, you know, the next customer for sure. So, yeah. But you guys are doing a great job. I mean, I have to say, I think from a marketing standpoint, you know, I have never seen any other window, and obviously I'm not in the industry, but I mean, you guys are, you know, standing out far and on, you know, but compared to everybody else. So,
Thank you. We're trying to.
Yeah, we appreciate that. No, it's definitely something where, it's getting out of our comfort zone. Like he said, he'd been talking about this forever, and this something. Part of the pushback was part of me not wanting to do it. I don't want to get in front of a camera. I don't want it to be about me. I don't want to talk about me. I just want to go do my job.
Right.
I just want to give me the building, give me the cars. Like I feel like my best skill is either like just completing the job, either if me installing it or give me a crew of guys and let me get on the ground and let's hit the ground running and let's figure out how we're going to get this job done in the time period that we've told the customer we're going to get it done and look how many panels there are, what kind of film. Like those are the puzzles I truly do love solving when I actually get to do it.
Yeah, you prefer the technical side of it too. I do too. I like to sit down and do Photoshop and design a website and stuff like that, but you know, I think your skill set is strong enough that you have to do this other stuff. You have to wear those hats. You know, as much as we want to go back to that 10%, it's kind of like the leadership ladder, right? So, you know, when you're first starting out, you're doing 70% technical, you know, you're doing 30% something else, you know, but then once you get to the management level, you're doing 70%, you know, managing, and you're doing that 30% technical too. So I think it's, you know, you're right in the right direction, Ricky. And I think you're doing great.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. I do.
Well, it's fun. This conversation has made me think of that book this weekend. Have you heard of The Motive?
No.
I don't know who the writer is. I just listened to the audiobook. It was an Alex Hormozi suggestion, and it was like we both listened to it the same morning, like while on a run, and it was a lot talking about that. Like if you're going to be a CEO and run a company, like the meetings and taking care of the people and the problems, the stuff you don't really want to deal with, that's your job.
To do. Yeah.
That's the most important thing you need to be doing. And that's like, it falls right in line with what you're saying. Hire really good people and get out of their way and try to provide a path for them to be successful.
Be the conduit in between each team to the communication, the hard conversations, all the stuff that technically, when it comes down to it, nobody wants to do, but needs to be done. If you're going to run something at a further scale,
right?
Like, is make sure everyone is working together cohesively, because everyone technically has the same end goal, but everyone operates differently when it comes down to it. Now, listening to that was the main, I think the drive behind it was like, what was your reasoning to get into leading, or like, were you trying to become a CEO, the head top of the company, or stuff like that? Like, was it for reward purposes, or is it for the right reasons when it comes down to it? And you know, I didn't think I would be at, I mean, maybe I did, a small part of me just knew that the path was going to be laid out to get to that point in the company, but not knowing what it's like until I get there, I do enjoy it. There's no doubt I do enjoy it, but did I want it? Not necessarily.
I think anybody ever wants all that responsibility, but at the same time, you know, the bigger problems that you can solve, right? The more money the company makes, the more money that you make. You know, I think that's also important too. You know, a window tinter, a dental assistant, you know, they're solving, you know, very important problems on a daily basis, but you know, a lot of people can do those problems, you know, but when you get to that level CEO, you're putting out all the fires. You're putting out these big issues, you know, compliance issues, state issues, you know, something like that comes down there. So, you know, I think the bigger problems you solve, you know, the harder it gets, but then also the more reward, I think, in the long run too.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree 100%. Well, man, I really appreciate you coming on. I really do.
This has been awesome, Ricky. I appreciate it. Man, I love the setup and what you guys are doing. Like I said, I mean, I have to get my wife on. And, you know, my parents and my grandparents, you know, they've been serial entrepreneurs. I took a different route in that side of it. I kind of went in the corporate world too. But I think that, you know, definitely my wife would be a lot more interesting than me on here.
Oh, I wouldn't. Well,
So she's doing a podcast?
Yeah, so she does, hers is the Three Stride podcast, so it's an equestrian podcast.
And, oh, cool.
You know, she started her own business, and not to go off a tangent, but she's starting her own business called Tack of the Town. She started it back in, it's been since my kid was probably my oldest, you know, so it's probably 8 years ago when she started it. And she's grown it from, you know, she purchased it for $15,000 with, you know, a lot of really old product in there. And she's grown it to, you know, a very successful brand, you know. And then not only that, she's always, you know, she's watching my kids too, full-time mom. Yeah. So it's, you know, we got a 9-year-old, a 7-year-old, and now an 11-month-old. So while doing that, she's also doing a podcast and, you know, and, you know, I don't know how she does it, but she does it well. So I definitely live vicariously through her. Sometimes I wish I had that entrepreneurial spirit. I mean, we do a little bit with the Holson Golf stuff, but, you know, from that standpoint though, you know, I prefer the weekends off, you know, but it's a lot of sacrifice. And I'm sure you know that as well. You know, I think when you're on the weekends and you're getting phone calls and putting out problems and stuff like that, I know that when I'm on the weekends, I'll get a phone call here and there, but, you know, my job ends around 5:30 every night, whereas her job never ends, you know, as an entrepreneurial, you know, and as somebody that's, you know, on that growth, you know, your job never ends. You know, it's 24 hours a day.
No, it's very true. No, and thankfully we've been able to, just growing up in it, that's like, I know you did too, like, you're never off. And that's one thing that I try to veer away from as much as I possibly can. And if anything, that's what I've learned from watching my dad is I don't want to be working 7 days a week. But at the same time, I also do know, like, always contact me. Like, that's my job. That's my title. I understand that. But I want to make sure I empower my team enough to where they can solve the problems. They don't have to have me unless, like, the building's literally on fire. And then it's like, yeah, you can call me. But, like, I mean, I just recently was able to go on vacation and, like, the first day I had to handle some stuff, but it was bleed over from the day before. It was customers I was contacting, already part of what I was doing. And it's at the time, everything lined up to where my cousin went into labor. He took over sales like a week and a half.
And he leaves town for 5 days.
And I leave.
It was great.
The perfect storm.
Oh, yeah. It was. It was. And
technically, it went great.
Though. It happened actually the last time she went into, because it's her second kid. The first time she went into labor, it was like literally, I woke up to my first day of vacation on Christmas, my Christmas vacation break to, so I'm in the hospital and I'm in labor. I'm like, all right. And, you know, we figured it out. But thankfully, with how we've been able to structure things and try to make it, it's like when I get to a point where if I'm going to go on vacation, like I want to be left alone as much as I humanly possibly can. Like, I want to go on vacation. I don't want to bug you guys on your vacation.
Right.
Please don't bug me on mine. I'm always here to be reached out to. And thankfully, with the team that we've kind of cultivated, and also watching my dad and seeing the experiences and stuff that, like, he's kind of done, like learning from technically how I look at it, his mistakes, he was a heavy micromanager. But I think that was out of necessity. It was trying to start a small business out of high school with a kid, and then you had two more kids, and
your livelihood rides on it. You know.
You put us through sports at the same. Like, I don't know how he did it. Yeah. It's blows my mind. I don't know how he did it. Like, if I had to put myself in his shoes, I don't know how I would survive it.
Yeah,
but I think it's probably similar to the same way people say they don't understand how you ran 100 miles. He just did it. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, as much as you're like, oh, whatever, I just put in the training and I did it. I think that's how he looked at it, right? And I think that kind of bled off onto us a little bit. Like,
oh, yeah.
Just being around that forever. Like, I remember remodeling homes and stuff, and now that sounds like such a giant inconvenience, but I have more time than he ever had. I can take the vacations and stuff. And, like, it's kind of just relative to...
Well, they set the framework for us, right? Yeah. It's the same thing with my dad, too. I think, you know, he also started his own business and sold it and is able to retire and, you know, but... Even to this day, you know, he's not running 100 miles, but he's running 5 miles a day. And for somebody that's, you know, 67 years old and running and doing that kind of stuff on a daily basis. And, you know, that willpower. I think that's kind of what we've gotten from our parents, right? The willpower, the determination, the grit. I think that's important too, to be able to push through the hard stuff. I think that's the difference. And that's what I'm trying to instill in my kids too, right? Because That's what's going to differentiate them between other kids out there,
especially nowadays.
Oh, yeah.
If you can raise a resilient kid these days, they're going to crush.
Oh, yeah. Dominant. Oh, yeah. Absolutely dominant. Yeah.
Cool.
I'm going to say take that spot as a good spot to wrap this up and do it again.
We'll have to do it again sometime.
Yeah, that would be great. Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm definitely going to hit Molly up, and that will be a very...
She's a lot more entertaining than me. I'm a little bit more... politically correct.
did Brittany and her know each other, doing the equestrian stuff?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
And Ricky, I mean, you guys all went to school together. Yeah. So,
yeah. No, I've known Molly since middle school.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Henderson's so small.
We're right across the street. I see Ricky every morning now running. And he's usually coming back from his 4 a.m. running when I'm just getting up and starting to lift too. But, I think we're the only two in the neighborhood that actually do something in the morning.
Everyone else waits about 9 o'clock and walk in the neighborhood. A little bit more of an elderly community, should I say.
Yeah, but it's been fun. I appreciate you guys very much. And again, you guys are doing amazing things. And, I look forward to seeing what you guys come up with next.
Oh, we appreciate it. And we appreciate all the knowledge from you because it's like actually good hearing everything you just said because it's like right where we're at. Like, that's the other, we're doing this selfishly. We want to learn and let's have awesome people on that have something to teach us. Like, and hopefully we've got something to teach back.
Absolutely. That's what I'm looking forward to. So we need to do whether it's a Thursday or something like that, get together and bring other like-minded people and really brainstorm of how we can help each other out. So
absolutely.
Yeah, cool.
All right. Well, hey everyone. Guys. We appreciate you following along for another episode. You guys know what to do. Hit subscribe, follow along, like, share, comment. We appreciate everything. Until next time.
Thank you. Subscribe.